It's time for This Week in the Big East, a comprehensive look at the teams, coaches, players, and the storied tradition of the Big East Conference. Here are your hosts, longtime conference play-by-play announcer John Rook and Big East author and sports writer Kevin McNamara.
Welcome to This Week in the Big East, our weekly look at the teams, coaches, players, and stories from the schools in the Big East Conference. I'm John Rook with Kevin McNamara. This is Season 7, Episode 2 for 2021. And as we hit the halfway point in this pandemic-shortened season, incredible to even imagine right now, isn't it? There is a constant to playing men's college basketball in the Big East, and it's known as unpredictability. Could do without the health and safety issues surrounding us all, of course, but the not knowing on the court, sometimes that's what makes it fun. It's certainly anticipatory, Kevin, and I know we've got some scheduling issues going on right now within the league as well.
John, not only the Big East, from the Atlantic 10, ACC, coast to coast, college basketball seems to be all about close games and those one-possession games that can truly flip a season. We've certainly seen that in the Big East. Just look at Providence. The last few games, losing at the buzzer, both to Creighton and Xavier. Friars are actually on a three-game losing streak after a loss to Marquette. Flip side, Xavier. 5-1 in games decided by 5 points or less. That is the difference between a good or a great season. You mentioned the scheduling. Villanova hasn't played a game since December 23rd because of a COVID pause. That schedule, you know, imagine being an assistant coach. Day to day, you're grinding things out, polishing the scout, hand it to your boss, and bang, postponed COVID. I guess that's life in 2021.
Yeah, unpredictability. Thy name is college basketball right now. Well, you want something more predictable, more surefire? Well, when you get the chance to, watch the Big East play on the floor. The teams, the athletes, the more they change, the more they stay the same. And we're going to talk about that coming up. So let's hit this week's On the Court Big East headlines. Three Big East schools find themselves ranked in the AP Top 25 this week, including a first-time first season here for UConn in the Big East, making an appearance in the poll for themselves for the first time in 5 years. What once was is now again. Villanova this week continues its COVID pause, as Kevin mentioned, now into a third week as the Wildcats maintain a league lead and a number three spot in the rankings. Nova is hopeful of returning to the floor this next week to face Seton Hall and Providence. Georgetown also hit the pause button this week, postponing a Wednesday home game with DePaul and postponing upcoming games with Providence and Marquette. Our condolences go out to the UConn family with the passing of former coach and athletic administrator D. Rowe this past week. Rowe was considered the architect or the godfather of UConn basketball, building the program into a New England power before the Huskies gained national attention. Home teams only 19-14 through midweek, which should say something about the lack of home crowds affecting play. Five Big East programs will try to hold down the home fort again this weekend. So, Kevin, we mentioned the Huskies program mourning the passing of one of the league's founding fathers, really, in D. Rowe. But on the floor, as we spoke with Dan Hurley last week, UConn's finding ways to improve and win even without star guard James Bouknight. That's the other big headline this week. He underwent elbow surgery and is out for an indefinite amount of time.
John, I have to pass along my condolences and wishes to D. Rowe's family. Just a prince of a man. I'm based in New England, and D. was Mr. UConn. And New England basketball, and everyone up here is really going to miss his influence on basketball and UConn basketball.
No question.
On the floor, without Bouknight, the good news is Dan Hurley has options. And watch for Tyrese Martin, the transfer from Rhode Island. I'm a big fan. I think he has huge upside. And the return of a cook just in time for the Huskies.
Ooh, yeah, so they probably aren't hurting, but at the same time, they're going to get that depth tested pretty quickly. Hey, thank you to our Westwood One affiliate stations this season for tuning in to check us out. Thank you for catching us on SiriusXM. And if you're doing the podcast thing, hey, subscribe, rate, review us, please. Apple and Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Overcast, Castro, CastBox, and PodFriend, all our partners. For more on our podcast, go online and visit us, www.twitby.buzzsprout.com. You can also listen to the program online at westwoodonesports.com and on BigEast.com. Inside Episode 2 this week, Creighton's play this season is taking a large slice of the national spotlight. Head coach Greg McDermott will join us coming up. Plus, we'll also get the national perspective from college basketball insider Rob Doster. And a young, talented big man continues a recent tradition of inside play as X marks the spot in Cincinnati. And Zach Fremantle joins us next. This week in the Big East.
Coming up this week in the Big East Spotlight. Big East Spotlight.
Chase forward along the sideline, controlled by Carter. Ahead to Kunkel, underneath the Fremantle, a pump fake and a dunk! Good for two. What a play by Kunkel and Carter. Two passes, Carter to Kunkel to Fremantle, and Fremantle hit a defender trying to block it, just a pump fake. He soared by, and then the dunk. Xavier leads 64-59. Fremantle now with 15 points in the ballgame.
He's listed at 6'9", so he already attracts his fair share of attention on and off of a basketball court. But then you notice the ability, quick moves to the rim, a touch around that rim, and a physicality to finish it all off. That's what really gets noticed. If you've watched Xavier play in recent years, you know that's a trademark thing for the Musketeers to do, right? Physicality inside. Sophomore forward Zach Fremantle joins us this week in the Big East. Zach, could you tell us what has stood out to you about Xavier's program when they were recruiting you out of New Jersey?
They recruited me harder than any other school, and it wasn't even close. I was talking to at least one, if not two or three coaches every day when they were recruiting me, and they made me feel like it was the right fit and that they wanted me more than anybody else.
Zach, we spoke this summertime about how a Jersey kid gets all the way to Cincinnati, Ohio. Just the lure of the Big East, although you're not in an old school Big East program, you clearly are a Big East type player. Was that a focus for you in the recruiting process?
Yeah, it was a big focus for me because the Big East is just such a known basketball conference. Like every team 1 through 10 or 11, whatever it is always good. Like there is no off nights or anything like that. So, yeah, I wanted to come play here because I knew it was just a basketball school.
Your game itself has sort of grown as you've been at Xavier for, you know, a season and a half now. Where would you say you really learned the most? Was it about the difference between, you know, prep and high school ball and college? Was it about the physicality game, about the offensive talent that you needed? What really shocked you about the change in basketball from the prep ranks to the college ranks?
For sure, the physicality. I mean, you're going from playing high school kids to playing grown men. So, I mean, yeah, the physicality definitely jumped out right away. Even in practice, going against guys like Tyreek and Dontarius and all them. So, the physicality jumped out right away.
And the transition from last year to this year, Zach, I think you realized that without Tyreek, you had to take on a bigger role inside. But clearly, you worked on your perimeter skills and ability to shoot the ball. Just discuss your progression from freshman to sophomore year.
I was going to have to take a bigger role this season, and I wanted to be that guy and stuff. So, I mean, I just try to work on everything from the weight room to getting as many shots up as I can, to ball handling, passing, anything I could do to give myself an advantage.
Zach Fremantle from Xavier University joining us this week in the Big East. So, Zach, what do you feel like you've improved your game the most in the time that you've been in college?
I'd say besides physicality and stuff like that, I'd say footwork, just like little details that help you always be ready, shot ready, always have like good angles to score with. I'd say my footwork is the most thing. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest jump.
All right. Now, Zach, what's in the water out there in Cincinnati? It seems as if when there's a close game, you guys find a way to not only win it, but win it in really dramatic fashion. Obviously, I'm speaking of the Marquette and the Providence games. Talk about finishes that really inspire an awful lot of confidence in a team.
Those games in particular ended really dramatically, but even going back to the beginning of the season, we had close ones with Bradley, we had a close one with Toledo. Like we've faced a lot of adversity that's helped us in the past, that's helped us now. And so yeah, like that coach just says, we gotta be ready for whatever, and those adversity-filled games definitely helped.
You know, we know that Xavier has had, a reputation of being a physical team, certainly in the time that you've been in the Big East. This year's team is a little bit different. I mean, you certainly seem to spread the floor out a little bit. You've got more guys that can shoot, and you shoot more often, and yet you still bring that physicality to the middle. Like you mentioned Tyreek Jones, who graduated from last year, and the like. How are you finding the mix between old school Xavier and new school Xavier working out this year? You guys seem to be doing okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been working well for us so far. We just try to take the best shot that's available. There's no egos on the team or nothing like that. So if someone got the hot hand, whether it's inside, outside, doesn't really matter. We're just going to go to them and try to get the best shot for Xavier we can.
Zach, you guys have had a really talented influx of transfers in both of your seasons. Jason Carter last year. This year, Nate Johnson, Adam Kunkel, Ben Stanley, who got injured. How has that transition been with infiltrating really talented guys into an established program like Xavier's?
I think it's been working really well for us. I mean, everybody comes in, they learn the system, they learn what type of team we want to be, and they all are on board 100%, ready to do whatever the team needs them to do. And when you got guys like that, it's really easy.
Zach, I got a tough one for you. I want you to describe yourself in one word.
I'd say passionate.
And why did you choose passionate?
Just because my passion, like, I love playing basketball more than anything. Like, sometimes it became to a fault and stuff. I caring too much about a shot or this and that. But, yeah, passion has been my MO since I got here.
John Rook, I'm happy you didn't ask me to describe myself in one word. I don't think I could do it. Zach hit it on the head. We always ask players this on the breakdowns. Your favorite Big East city to go into?
I'd have to say going to play at the Garden, playing St. John's or the Big East tournament or whatever. Whenever we're in New York City, that'd have to be my favorite just because it's so close to home. I get a good feeling from it. I get to see my family. So I always love when we get to go back to New York.
All right, and then who's the favorite guy for you to go up against in the league? Whose game do you respect? Who do you find yourself challenged to go up against thus far in the league from any other team, any other school?
I mean, there's so many great guys in this league. I mean, from who I've played so far, I'd probably say Sandro just because, I mean, they got us last game, so I'm really looking forward to this upcoming game. We got to get them back.
Zach, how did you guys deal with the pause that you had? Obviously, most schools in the league have had difficulty with the COVID testing and getting everyone through week to week. I'm sure it's been a great challenge. You guys dealt with it and seemed to deal with it pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, when we got shut down like that, I mean, we couldn't get in the gym, obviously, but we were still working in our dorms, obviously staying socially distant and whatnot. But we were doing anything we could just to stay in shape, whatever we could do, really. We just had to make sure we were good coming back.
All right, final question for you, Zach. I know this is hugely important to anybody from your part of the state of Ohio. Are you a Skyline Chili guy?
I am not.
Wow.
What's been the issue with you getting used to that?
It's just weird to me. Like, it's like the chili, it's not like my mom makes chili and it looks nothing like the chili they use. And I just can't get into it.
I think you're forgiven as long as you continue to put up points and rebounds for the Musketeers. How's that?
That sounds good.
Xavier's Zach Fremantle. Next up, who's hot? Who has the hot hand? Who are the young guys making their way into college fans' hearts and minds? Well, we'll have the week's best players and the top performers next. This week in the Big East.
Coming up, who's hot? This week in the Big East. Who's hot?
Antoine to Mitch, a 40-footer at the buzzer is good! Holy cow! Mitch Ballack from more than 40 feet away buries another.
It looks like some full court pressure man-to-man variety being employed by Providence as they set it up. Paul Scruggs with it, fakes, top of the key, shot clock down to two, game shots on the way, and it's good by Colby Jones. Xavier leads 74-73 with 0.1 second to play.
Ice in his veins.
Welcome back to This Week in the Big East. John Rook with Kevin McNamara. Time for Who's Hot? Yeah. Well, I would tell you that in one particular instance, Connecticut's success is because they've been able to find guys to back up James Bouknight. He's out for a while with an injury, but Tyler Polley had a huge week for the Huskies this week. Coming off the bench, a 2-0 week for the Huskies in the 65-54 win at Marquette, in which they actually outscored the Golden Eagles at one point, Kevin, 42-13 in the second half and late in the first half. He scored a career-high 23 points. In a win at Butler, he actually had 19 and made 5 of 8 from behind the arc. So for the week, 21 points, 71% from three. They have a weapon.
10 three-pointers. What coach wouldn't like an instant offense guy like that off the bench, John? Kind of reminds me of an old-school over pal of yours way back in the San Antonio days with George Gervin. You know, 6'8", 6'9", firing from three-point land. We'll see if he can remain that valued bench weapon for Dan Hurley going forward.
All I need to know is, can he finger roll? That's all we need to know. And it seems like he has just about every other part of his game going right now. All right, Big East Freshman of the Week. A super performance for Colby Jones from Xavier, who hit the game winner with less than a second to go to beat Providence in the past week. And, of course, we find out afterward that his grandfather had passed away just 2 days earlier. So a tremendously emotional time for young Mr. Jones and the Xavier family. But his scoring ability is very evident, especially when you forget about him out on the floor.
Just another weapon for Xavier. You know, they've really done a great job in close games. That was a big-time shot to beat Providence. And then afterwards, to have him address his grandfather's passing, I believe it was only 2 days after, before the Providence win. Just a really touching moment, and hats off to Colby.
Yeah, he had 16 points and a win over St. John's as well, and averaged 12.5 points and shot 63% from the field in the week. On the Big East Honor Roll, some familiar names that you'll certainly recognize, and one up-and-coming star. Bryce Enzi from Butler had 14 points, 5.5 rebounds in a 1-1 week. Denzel Mahoney from Creighton, 19 points, 3.5 rebounds in the week for the Blue Jays, 24 points and a win over St. John's. Providence's David Duke had a game-high 30 in their last-second loss to Xavier. Jared Roden, Seton Hall, also 14 points during the week, had 18 in a win over DePaul. But Dawson Garcia, the young freshman from Marquette at 6'11", also makes the honor roll, had 20 points and 11 boards, career numbers against UConn. That young man has got some real length and some real ability.
John, the only McDonald's All-American recruit that came into the Big East year, and we can understand why. Very versatile big man. He's always been pretty good around the rim, actually very good around the rim. But now he's showing that he can step away and shoot three-pointers. That's why I don't believe he's going to be around Milwaukee for 4 years, hopefully multiple years. But he definitely has NBA ability.
This week, our blast from the past in the Big East Conference.
Donnie Marshall jumps out on Caver. Caver has it stripped. Donnell Marshall off to the races.
That was pretty. Well, I thought he was going to get grabbed here. He gets fouled. Oh, 360. Oh, that's as much reaction as I've seen out of him. Woo. Why not?
It was 27 years ago when Connecticut's Donnell Marshall scored 42 points at MSG against St. John's. January 15th, 1994, still the most in a Big East game for a UConn Husky. He also hit 20 for 20 from the foul line that game, which is still a Big East record. Remember that game pretty well, actually, overall, Kevin, since you and I go back that far. And it was James Bouknight that got really close to clipping that mark, or at least tying that mark, when he hit 40 against Creighton recently.
John, one of the bonuses of being so old, we remember Donnell as a freshman. And I remember the recruiting process where it was kind of overlooked coming out of Reading, Pennsylvania, but Jim Calhoun certainly found a gem. From the moment he got it going in stores, we knew he was going to be a star and went on to a great NBA career as well.
Yep. So it was Donnell Marshall with 42, basically 27 years ago this week. Turning the page of time one more time toward the present day, and even as we do so, it still seems like the more things change, the more they stay the same at places like Creighton. The Blue Jays could shoot and score with the best of them, but there's another element elevating the Jays' flight upward into the national rankings this year, and head coach Greg McDermott joins us to tell us about it next. This week in the Big East.
Coming up next, the Big East Focus.
We're tied. 7 seconds left. 6 seconds left. Zagorowski with four, with three. Zagorowski hands off to Bishop. He goes in and dunks it. He goes in and dunks it. 0.5 seconds left. Zagorowski hands it to Christian Bishop. Bishop went in for the dunk with 0.5 seconds to go. Oh, what poise by Marcus Zagorowski and Christian Bishop going in with the big two-hand slam. And the Jays lead by two.
Welcome back to This Week in the Big East. Creighton's Blue Jays have long been sharpshooters. In fact, some of the most accurate in college basketball year in and year out. This year is apparently no exception to that rule, that Creighton must shoot and will make their fair share of threes. But there's another ingredient in the mix this season that has the Jays playing doubly tough, tough enough to be a top 10 team, perhaps over the long haul. There's defense out there that appears to be improving from game to game. Creighton head coach Greg McDermott joins us this week in the Big East. Greg, is it fair to say your guys are buying in on both sides of the ball and both sides of the floor thus far?
I don't think there's any question. I think we made good strides on the defensive end, and you would hope that that would be the case. You know, we've got a veteran team, and many of them have been in our program 3 and 4 years, so you would like to think that if we're doing anything in practice that's the right kind of stuff, that they're going to pick it up. But this group's been really connected, and on both ends of the floor. They're unselfish offensively, obviously, and then defensively they've done a better job of covering up each other's mistakes.
Hey, Greg, to go off John's question, when you bring in someone like Denzel Mahoney and Damian Jefferson, they look like old school Big East players, the kind that John and I have watched forever and ever. Is that what you saw in them as well?
Yeah, you know, we were excited, when DJ transferred from New Mexico. Obviously, we loved his athletic ability, and he was a great scorer in high school. Got off to a rough start shooting the basketball at New Mexico, but we felt like there was something there offensively that we could develop. And then we really liked his versatility, not only offensively, but defensively as well. And then we felt Denzel, even though he played more the power forward spot at Southeast Missouri, we liked his lateral quickness and felt like he could develop into a pretty good defender. And obviously he's big and strong and physical, and I think you have to have guys like that on your roster to win some grinded out games that you're gonna come across to the Big East. We're great in a shootout, but the reality of it is our league's so good that there's not going to be a lot of shootouts. You're going to have to win possession by possession games, and to do that, there has to be a level of physicality, and those two certainly bring that to us.
You know, Coach, you mentioned both obviously Jefferson and Mahoney as transfers. Just out of curiosity here, I think I know the answer, but I'd like for you to answer it anyway. How much extra time do you spend recruiting, knowing that transfers are liable to happen for everybody every year? It seems like almost every team has 3 or 4 quality players who began their career somewhere else.
Well, it's certainly part of what we have to do in the world that we're living in right now, and I think it's about to get worse. I think when the immediate eligibility passes for all transfers, I just think it's going to add a whole nother layer to our recruiting. And having said all that, I think the basis of our program, at least I would like it to be, is that we get guys and as high school come out of high school, and we're able to develop them, and they're really able to grab a hold of our culture as a young player, and that becomes important to them as they become juniors and seniors, and now they're in charge of passing on some of those things that are so important from a cultural standpoint to the underclassmen. And I hope that doesn't go away. I think it's a fun part of college basketball for fans is to watch these young people kind of grow up in front of your eyes from a freshman to a sophomore to a junior to senior. And I hope people, young people and their families are patient enough to let that process kind of take care of itself. Having said all that, there's going to be a lot of transfers, and, you know, we would be foolish to think that people aren't going to leave our program. We haven't had as many as most, but we'll certainly keep our radar up to try to bring young people in as well. If it's a fit, you know, I think transfers, I think it has to fill a void on your roster, and it has to be a culture fit. Otherwise I don't think it's a great idea.
Excellent example of one of those high school progression guys is certainly Marcus Zagorowski comes in. He's the preseason player of the year in the Big East. And it's funny, you guys are rolling through your schedule and Marcus isn't, quote, playing all that well. I think most coaches in the league would love a Marcus not playing all that well. Had a great game at Providence, then played really well on the New York trip. Where is your leader, and do you consider him your leader, as well as Mitch Ballack, I would imagine, this season?
Yeah, you know, we kind of have leadership by committee, and certainly Marcus does it in his own way, and as does Mitch. But, you know, Damian and Denzel, you know, Christian Bishop, Jet Canfield, guys that have been in our program, they all – it's kind of a committee of leadership, and they have each other's back, and they've really done a great job of helping bring some of the – not necessarily – we have a few young guys that are playing, but you know, Antoine Jones that transferred from Memphis and you know, Alex O'Connell, who's now eligible, the transfer from Duke, and you know, trying to get them to kind of fit into the mix as quickly as possible. And their leadership's been very important in that regard. But, you know, Marcus, obviously everybody knows he missed some time in the offseason with the surgery last March, and it takes time to get your legs back under you. And, you know, I think he was playing some of his best basketball before we sat him out this week, but I'm confident we'll have him back soon.
Creighton's Greg McDermott joining us this week in the Big East. John Rook, Kevin McNamara. Coach, for whatever reason, as I watch your team play this year, I sense you have an it factor. I'm not sure what it is, but do you know what it is?
You know, we have to play in an unselfish manner. And, you know, I think other teams may be more blessed than and have more guys that can just break you down off the dribble and go make a play than we have. And that's okay. We have enough people because of our spacing that can get into seams and can make things happen. But then, you know, are you cutting for yourself, or are you cutting to help a teammate get open? Are you driving the basketball with the singular focus of trying to get yourself a shot, or are you trying to create something for somebody else? And as long as we're thinking beyond ourselves, that's the it factor for us. And, you know, the same goes on the defensive end. If, you know, if somebody gets beat off the dribble, or if we blow up an assignment on a switch of a screen, are we locked onto our guy on the weak side, or are we thinking about, all right, I can go over and kind of put this fire out and still get back and do what I'm supposed to do on the weak side of the floor? So for us, it's playing for others and making plays for others and trying to help your teammates the best you possibly can. And if, you know, if we can continue to do that, we're going to be in position to win games. And then it becomes a make shot, miss shot game. And you hope you make a few more than your opponent.
Greg, you may want to take the game film of that St. John's game where I think you had, was it 24, 25 assists? Maybe that becomes a recruiting video. Was that exactly what you're speaking of?
Yeah, guys did a great job, you know, moving to basketball. Our shot, the quality of our shots was really, really good. And, you know, St. John's is a hard team to guard. I think they're hard to guard for everybody. They move the ball. They cut extremely hard. They put pressure on you in transition every single time. And, you know, Champagne's playing at an incredibly high level. But, you know, our guys really moved the basketball, especially in the first half. I think we had 16 assists and 3 turnovers at halftime. You know, that kind of basketball is also infectious. I just think if a guy like Mitch Ballack, for instance, is so willing to make extra passes and turn down shots to get his teammates shots, I think it's easier for everybody else to follow in line.
Thanks again to Creighton's Greg McDermott. Kevin, Marcus Zagorowski's also been battling some injury issues on his own, most notably with a hamstring of Lake. Coach McDermott says he's day-to-day. His teammates, though, are certainly picking up any slack that they might have.
One of the reasons why Creighton deserves its top 10 ranking, John, is their depth. You know, Marcus Zagorowski, preseason Big East Player of the Year, big-time star, has to miss a game or two. Greg McDermott has Alex O'Connell, transfer from Duke, has already shown that he can knock in the threes that Zagorowski can, and just add him to Mitch Ballack, Sharif Mitchell, just a host of really good players in the Creighton backcourt.
Well, while the Jays certainly have it going on just about at every level right now, how do they stack up with the other top teams around the country? And is college basketball performing at the level it should be despite the ongoing pandemic? Rob Doster, who authors the Rebound blog on college hoops, he'll join us to talk about that next. This week in the Big East.
Coming up next, the National Perspective. The National Perspective.
back to Bynum with six, with five into the right corner. Reeves deep three. Oh, my! He brought rain with that one.
Yeah, the shot clock was down to three, like you mentioned, John, and Reeves knocks down a big one. He likes the end of the game making shots.
Welcome back to This Week in the Big East. Three teams in the top 25, two or three others looking worthy, perhaps, of being there at some point. And yet the Big East, now at 11 teams this season, may or may not be at the level of, say, the Big 10 or the Big 12 this year. Rob Doster covers the national picture for The Rebound and his Field of 68 podcast network with Jeff Goodman, and he joins us this week in the Big East. Rob, what in your mind kind of sets this league apart from the other teams in the other leagues, in particular, you know, the Big 10, the Big 12, as I mentioned, especially with the Big East having included a resurging UConn program this year?
Well, I'm glad that UConn's back, first and foremost. I grew up on the Big East, and being able to see some of those rivalries get reignited has been something that's fun. You know, a little bit nostalgic and brings me back to my youth a little bit. So I've really enjoyed that. The other part that I think kind of sets them apart from some of the other leagues is, you know, the individual talent. There are a lot of stars in this conference. And I know that we lost Miles Powell and Marcus Howard and you know, some of these big names and All-Americans. But Sandro Mamukelashvili at Seton Hall has just been unbelievable this year. I think he's a guy that could end up being a first-round pick. Obviously, James Bouknight has really taken a step forward. And he's kind of embraced the breakout star role that that everybody had kind of labeled him with. And, you know, he's probably going to be another guy that ends up being a top 15 pick or so in the draft. And then, you know, even like Creighton with Marcus Zagorowski and some of the guys at Villanova who we haven't seen play in what feels like 2 months. There's a lot of star power in the conference. So it's been fun to watch.
No, Rob, you're absolutely right. It took you a while to get to Villanova and Jeremiah Robinson Earl and Colin Gillespie and David Duke from Providence, you know, maybe guys who didn't get a lot of love preseason. Of course, they get love on The Rebound and here and on This Week in the Big East. But I'm curious, you mentioned Villanova, really difficult situation for Jay Wright's team. Obviously, an awful lot of good teams around the country have dealt with a pause. How do you look at Villanova and what can you expect when they get back on the floor?
I mean, it's so hard to know. You know, from what I understand is that they've had a lot of guys that have had to be quarantined in hotel rooms and kind of be stuck away from a typical what you would expect for a basketball team in the middle of basketball season, right? Like, it's not like they're in the gym. It's not like they're working out. It's not like they have their wind. So I don't know what kind of shape these guys are going to be in. You know, I can sit around and do nothing for a week, and I know how out of shape I feel. I can't imagine what that is like for kids that are in much better physical condition than I am. So it's hard, man. Once your legs go, it's the shooting, it's the defense, everything kind of goes with it. So it'll be interesting to see how they end up dealing with that. Like, I just thought it's such uncharted territory. I don't know what you can really expect now. The thing with Villanova is that they are just so talented and so good and so well-drilled at what they do that they might be able to kind of withstand it, but it's not going to be easy. And it's going to be one of those things, like, I've been tracking this a little bit, and it's one of those things where they might be able to hang with the team for a half and they'll be up 10 heading into halftime. They'll come out in the second half and it's just that other team will have been practicing for the last 3 weeks and Villanova will not have been practicing for the last 3 weeks. And I think that's somewhere that you can kind of see it show up is once you get into the last 10 or 15 minutes of games where you just don't have your legs anymore.
Rob Doster joining us this week in the Big East. I wonder if you've been able to get a grip yet on how you feel the sport of college basketball is performing right now in spite of the pandemic. Number one, should we be playing in your estimation? Number two, since they are playing, how are they doing? How are they pulling it off?
I've kind of gone at this even since the summer with the mindset of expect nothing, expect no basketball, expect no sports, expect nothing to be played, expect no NCAA tournament, and just be happy with anything that we get. And I think that's kind of where I'm at right now. And honestly, I do think they're doing about as good of a job as you could be considering the situation in our country and kind of the way that we have dealt with this virus as a nation. But I'm torn on whether or not we should be playing. And you know, it's very hard for me to sit here and justify having a bunch of student athletes who are unpaid amateurs out there playing in games and practicing with their teammates every day when we're told as a nation that, like, we can't even go home and see our parents at Christmas, right? So part of me says that this should not be happening. The other part of me says, well, there's a lot of kids here that would be like dealing with some of the same stuff, like the isolation and the mental health issues that a lot of other people are dealing with if they weren't able to go out and compete. And then there's another part of me that's like, well, if these guys are living out of hotel rooms and they're doing this, not as professionals, not as NBA players, but as kids that are supposed to be like going to class and whatever at this point in time, then it's also a concern, like, is that really the best thing for them? So the way that I've kind of settled on this is that the players that are playing probably want to be playing, and it's best for them to probably be playing. And as long as you can just kind of assume that we are doing this as safely as possible and everybody is taking the necessary precautions and have that good faith assumption that people are doing this the right way, then, you know, I've kind of set that part aside in my mind and said, I'm not going to complain about this. Shouldn't be happening because this is what these kids want to do. And if we can find a way to do it as safely as possible, that's probably the best option.
No, Rob, I'm with you. You know, it's not about Kevin McNamara and whether I can cover games or the fans can go or whether we can go to a Final Four or the coaches even. It's really about the players. And I think if it's not 100%, it would definitely be 90% if we gave a poll out to everyone whether they would rather do that or be home with their families. But there's one team that clearly wants to play because they are a total wagon. There may be two wagons in the country, but right now – I'm leaning more toward Gonzaga over Baylor. I'm curious where you are with those two top dogs.
Yeah, I think Gonzaga is the best team in the country. They're so talented, man. And the way that they can space the floor with the shooters that they have, you know, they have three guys, I think, that are very high level pros as point guards that are playing on their perimeter at the same time. And Jalen Suggs, obviously, Joel Ayayi, and Andrew Nembhard. I think Joel Ayayi is going to end up playing in the NBA at some point. And Andrew Nembhard, if he doesn't play in the league, like, he's going to be a very high level pro overseas for a long time. And having all three of those players who all stand 6'4" or taller, along with a Corey Kisper, along with a Drew Timmy, along with an Anton Watson, like, that's just, there is so much talent and so much weaponry on that roster. It's ridiculous. But Baylor, I mean, Baylor's loaded too. You know, we sit here and we say how good Gonzaga is, but Baylor matches up with them perfectly. They're older. They're more experienced. They are much, much better defensively. And you know, Scott Drew, as much flack as he gets from people like me and people like you guys, like, it just he's just such a good coach, man. I know the running joke is like, oh, Scott Drew can't coach. Well, you know what? That guy's pretty good at his job and pretty good at finding a way to make this work with this Baylor team, man. They're so loaded. But I'll tell you this much. I'm working on something on Michigan right now, and I really think that they're just as good as both of those teams. Like, the more that I sit and watch the film, they can really, really defend. They have one of the best weapons in college basketball in Hunter Dickinson. And the way that they can shoot, man, that team, that is a very, very good basketball team that I think still might be going a little bit under the radar.
Got a few seconds left here, Rob, so I'm wondering where you feel Big East teams might compare either favorably or not so to some of the elite in the country that you just mentioned, especially at the top of the list with Villanova and Creighton. How do they compare? Can they be competitive once we get to March, if we get to March?
Villanova, yes, if we're operating under the assumption that they're going to be up at 100% and they're going to be in shape and everybody's going to be ready to go and they don't have any more shutdowns. Villanova, absolutely. They have the talent to win a national title. They, even with the teams that we just discussed. Creighton, not as much. They're dangerous. Marcus Zegarowski is a monster when he's playing well. It looks like he's kind of turned a corner in that regard a little bit, but I'm a little bit worried about the size they have inside and the reliance that they have on the three. Like, they're one of those teams where I think they can beat anybody in the country, and they can also lose to far more teams because it's a little of the, you know, the old adage, live by the three, die by the three.
That's the Rebound and Field of 68 Podcast Network's Rob Doster. Who's got next? Kevin and I will touch on the schedule as presently planned coming up this week in the Big East.
Coming up, who's got next? This week in the Big East. Who's got next? This week in the Big East.
Pitch pass outside. Champagne back in the game. Shoots the three and misses it. Rebound to O'Connell. And now the Jays with a 2-on-1. All the way home! AOC! Layup and foul! Count it!
John Rook, Kevin McNamara, this week in the Big East. Who's got next? Well, sometimes we just don't know, and we have to kind of check the schedule ourselves because we've had some changes to the slate again, as you might imagine, with the pandemic going on. It's been going on, as we mentioned earlier, with Villanova. It happened this week to Georgetown, which postpones three of their games as well, including a Saturday game at Providence. But, Kevin, there's still a couple of big games on the slate, as there always are, and let's talk with Xavier and Seton Hall. Xavier going to play at Seton Hall on Saturday afternoon. Big for both sides, as both of those teams have kind of risen up to the top five in the league.
Yeah, John, I think there's some delineation in the Big East right now. Villanova, Creighton, Connecticut, Seton Hall, and Xavier. But those five have separated themselves a little bit, both in the overall and in the league play. And I think that's a really intriguing matchup, Xavier, Seton Hall. We just spoke to Zach Fremantle earlier in the show, and that physical, aggressive style that Xavier plays kind of matches up nicely with Seton Hall. I can see a Big East rivalry blooming.
Yeah, no question right there. You've got Marquette also playing at St. John's. Creighton will be at Butler, and DePaul has added a non-league game with Valparaiso for Saturday afternoon. There's one game on Monday, St. John's playing at UConn. And Kevin, I think when UConn came back to the Big East, this is the type of game that they hope that they can sort of rekindle rivalries with a lot of teams.
I think UConn fans will remember those great games with St. John's for years and years. And to get it going again, I'm sure is exciting for Huskies everywhere. Great opportunity for UConn to keep it going. Four in a row at this stage of the game of the season is very attractive for Dan Hurley.
Especially doing it without James Booknight's services, as we talked about earlier. On Tuesday, there's a doubleheader. You've got Butler playing at DePaul. And then we believe Villanova will be back for the first time in 4 weeks at home against Seton Hall.
Quite a challenge for Jay Wright's team. You know, been in the top 25, been in the top five, actually risen in the top 25 throughout their pause. But what can you expect from the Wildcats at this point, John? It's really tough to weigh.
Well, I'm just going to ask you, I know that you vote in the AP Top 25, and it seems to me that there has to be some consideration for others who are playing and gaining momentum when some teams, maybe due to no fault of their own, are left standing on the sidelines. How do you measure that, and how do you weigh that from one team to another?
Well, I think each voter can weigh it differently. I refuse to penalize anyone who is sitting out because of a COVID pause. Villanova actually has risen in the polls throughout its time. They're up to number three. They've been four and five before that. I think it's interesting. If you look at the top 25, John, we can probably pick out 10 teams that have had pauses. I think the trick is how you deal with it and how you limit it. Villanova's has gone on a little too long, so we really wish the Wildcats well and hopefully great health throughout the remainder of the season.
Yeah, you have to remember they actually had a pause back in September as well. So the COVID pandemic has certainly hit the Wildcats program. Wednesday, we look like we'll have a triple header. Georgetown plays at Marquette. Xavier plays at UConn. That ought to be a dynamite one, a brand new start of a brand new rivalry there. And then Providence, having lost three in a row, two in excruciating fashion. Then we have a game this weekend. Now got to go on the road and take on eighth-ranked Creighton. That is a big bite for the Friars to chew.
Tough spot for Ed Cooley's team. I think they would probably say they think they're playing pretty well. You know, you lose two games at the buzzer and you lose on the road at Marquette. Marquette is certainly a very tough team to knock off. They really could have enjoyed a win just to snap that losing streak. Not that a game against Georgetown is easy by any stretch, but in theory, they could have, you know, get back on the winning track against Georgetown. Now the next two at Creighton, at Villanova.
Ouch.
Friars could be looking at it quite a streak here.
Ouch. All right, so what did we talk about at the beginning of the show? Unpredictability. I think that actually will hold force this week. I think it's quite possible that we can throw some surprise in there as well along with that.
Let's just wish everyone good health. If we can have 11 teams healthy for a good stretch here, I think the league as a whole will gain an awful lot of notoriety and get some consistency that every coach is looking for this time of season.
Our thanks to Xavier, Zach Fremantle, Creighton's Greg McDermott, and the Rebound's Rob Doster for joining us this week. Thanks go out to all of our flagship radio stations for their assistance, to producer Kevin Collins, executive producer John Paquette, and thanks to all of the coaches and administrators at all 11 Big East member institutions. For Kevin McNamara, I'm John Rook. Find us on Twitter at JR Broadcaster, at Kevin McNamara 33. Make sure you use that hashtag, TWITBE, twit me. Find out what's going on. Send us your questions. We'll use them on upcoming shows. We'll join you again right here next week for This Week in the Big East.
Thanks for listening to This Week in the Big East. Special thanks to our member schools as well as their athletic departments. This Week in the Big East is produced by Kevin Collins. The executive producers are John Paquette and Rick Gentile. Be sure to join us next week for the latest edition of This Week in the Big East.